welcome everybody to another edition of Forever Bristol City podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today by Ian, Mark and Dave Fevs, a distinguished trio there, all with different views. It's not looking great. The final score at Ewood Park last night, it finished Blackburn Rovers 2, City 1. For my part, I thought there was a 20-minute spell in the game where we looked half decent. We'll come on to that later, but it was a disappointing result. And it's one win now in six for a new manager, Liam Manning. Although, as Neil has pointed out to me, it's not that bad, really. When you look at Joe Edwards, the star of England under 20, goes in at Millwall. First game, wonderful, but not great since. They're 2 points off the relegation zone and playing Leicester tonight. So, you know, we're not the only team that are in a bit of a spot at the moment in the wake of having a new manager. Guys, I'll start with you first, Dave, because you always do bring a voice of reason, which when you look at OTIB in the last 12 hours, it's gone into the predictable meltdown. As you normally do, Dave, what were your immediate thoughts at 9:45 and as you sucked your cup of tea at the end of the game?
I was really disappointed last night. I think I expected us to start to, you know, see more of Liam Manning's style of football out there. And if anything, it was more long ball, more direct than we saw under Nigel Pearson. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but I expect us to be able to start to impose the way he wants to play in games against teams who are in the middle of the table with us. If we can't do it against those teams, we're not going to bust that ceiling at any point, are we? So, yeah, I was very, very disappointed. I don't think, you know, a 25-minute spell at the end of the game when you're 2-0 down really counts for too much.
Okay. Ian, what were your thoughts? I know you had a session on Radio Bristol last night, but, you know, in the cold light of day, 12 hours later, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking pretty much the same. Max O'Leary must have been told to do what he was doing last night and play whoosh football. And I get what he was trying to do. I think he was trying to pick up the second balls when their centre-halves won them, because their defenders are always going to win balls in the air because we've got a forward line of, in football terms, midgets. So that's exactly where they want the ball. They want it in the air so they can get up, they can win it, they can head it in. The problem was we weren't picking up the second balls all the time. We did rob their defence a couple of times, but we didn't test the keeper. And with that, the longer it goes on, you think, I don't think these players are going to be able, or some of these players are going to be able to adapt to play the way he wants to play. And the only way you cure that is with signings. And as I've recently said, and I'll make the point briefly, we've got two massive problems down there. Now, there are lots of little incremental parts of these two massive problems, but the two massive problems, we've had an ongoing injury crisis for four years. And the second is we can't score goals, and we haven't been able to since the WSM broke up.
No, fair enough.
So and we, you know, we, in essence, what Nigel did was fixed one end of the team and broke the other.
All right.
And when I say broke the other, it broke up reasonably, what I call naturally. So those are the problems we got to solve. Manning's not going to be able to solve that in 5 minutes that he's been here. So we just have to wait and see. But like Dave, I was extremely disappointed, not by the result, although it was a disappointing result, but by the performance and the way we played for the first 60 minutes.
Okay. Mark, what were your thoughts? You know, because it was, as Ian's just said, a mid-table game, a mid-table team. They're prolific scoring, but they let in a few as well. What you know, was there any good of it, anything good from your perspective?
Yeah, there were parts. I mean, overall, incredibly frustrated because we didn't play with any intensity for 60 minutes. We are capable of getting players who can step in midfield, run at defenders and bring our wide men into the game. You know, if you got, if you're centre backs, so you've got players running at you. If you know, it's hard to cope with that. But if they're just playing the ball around comfortably in front of you, it's much easier to sit and defend. The good points were we could see Rob Dickey winning the ball deep, stepping into midfield, making tackles. But something's got to come of that. We've got to use that as a springboard. But nobody was prepared to either James or Williams, who was taken off, really, to put pressure on their centre backs and bring our players into play. Our forwards get knocked off the ball too easily. We haven't really got anybody who can hold the ball with his back to goal. And the one player really who tried to win the game on his own, Jason Knight. You know, had three or four good chances. He had an excellent game, was unlucky not to score.
Yeah, but and apart inspired. From that,
the thing is, we're in a lot of these games. It's very comfortable. You know, we're playing. Blackburn didn't look a cut above us at all. They passed the ball around nicely. They looked like they had us under pressure when we were 1-0 down, but they didn't really force O'Leary into any spectacular saves. It was basic mistakes again that cost us.
Okay, Dave. Mark's just said the starting midfield of James and Williams. You're not going to get. And I don't want to talk about formations because I know it's fluid in games, but there's no creativity there at all and no real pace amongst those two. And whilst you've got Knight, you know, he's been a revelation as a player. But, you know, were you surprised at the starting lineup? You know, do you think maybe Conway deserved to start or out of form, Nicky Bell, out of form, Sam Bell was lucky to still keep his place?
I was surprised at the lineup, not that I necessarily knew who would start, but I'm really surprised that having gone from a fairly kind of like rigid selection policy under Nigel Pearson, which in you know principles of I kind of agreed with, but I thought sometimes some players it was almost kind of quite difficult to lose your place at times. And then I thought what we'd see under Manning would be some rotation and I couldn't understand, you know, one selection last night, you know, for me was why wasn't Taylor Gardner-Hickman starting? And I don't necessarily care who he played with, who he left out for it, because I also think Andy Vyman had a decent game on Saturday, and he didn't start as well. So I'm a bit confused by why Gardner-Hickman's been left out the last two games. You know, understand rotation. Surely starts one of them.
So
I wasn't enamored with the team selection. I never judge a team selection before the game because you never know how they're going to go and play. I learned that lesson years ago under Lee Johnson and went up to Newcastle and it was probably the worst 11 I've ever seen picked. And yet we went 2-0 up and got a 2-2 draw. But
so saw that one. Yeah, saw that.
But it just seemed a strange way of rotating the side last night. We had made one change and that was Cam Pring coming back in, which was an obvious one, but I thought there were some wrong choices out there, let's say.
Okay. Ian, you raised your hand in approval there. I mean, TGH being left out of the starting lineup for both, is that suggesting that he doesn't fancy him that much and he's thinking, well, if I don't play him, then I'm not going to give, you know, I don't have to buy him in summer and, you know, we've already made that commitment there. Maybe that money can be better spent in Manning's eyes. So do you agree with that? And what did you think of the lineup?
Well, I think you're reading into a conspiracy theory there, but with Gardner-Hickman, but I think he just made a selection error in the same way he did at QPR when he played Knight as a holding midfield player. He hasn't made that mistake since. And I hope he doesn't make the mistake. We know Joe Williams struggles to play two games a week, never mind three. He certainly can't play two on the bounce. He certainly can't play Saturday, Tuesday or Saturday, Wednesday. So this comes back to what I was saying last time, that our people at the club talking to him and saying, well, you know, Joe doesn't play two games a week because if he does, he gets injured, et cetera, et cetera. But no, I mean, had he made the changes that he made after 58 minutes at the start, I think it could have been a different game and we could have done much better because we have more energy and more legs. And one thing you need to do to play Manning ball is have energy in legs, which is another reason why I don't think some of the players will be up to it. The point Mark made about the strength in our forwards is absolutely right. We haven't got strong, physically strong forwards. And unless you're going to put and something else he has tactically that you know he could have done for the last half hour of the game would be to try to leave Conway on and bring Cornick on and play with two strikers.
The number of times we say that, Ian, play with two.
But all of our strikers, it's a fact that all of our strikers are better in a two, and it's proven. And so unless all of a sudden we're going to start playing cosmic football, Barcelona-style football and play through teams and keep it on the floor all the time and all the rest of it, you're going to need two guys up front. And I think all of ours are better next to somebody else. I mean, the best combination we got from what I've seen is Conway and Wells. But obviously, Naki's another one that it comes back to the injury thing again. And there's him in.
And when is he going to come back? Because he was just going to be out for a few weeks, wasn't he? All right, let's move on. Mark, let's get into the action. It wasn't as bad a night as it was at an afternoon up in Huddersfield. And, we started brightly. Conway over the top, but then they're prolific. And Smodic's having a free kick save, so a few early chances. But I'll come to you first on the first goal, Mark, and then each of you. Mark, how did you see that goal? They showed with one will-o'-the-wisp move how it should be done. Yeah, do you think we should have done better with the goal, Mark?
Oh, God, yeah. Scott Wharton is just over the halfway line. He passes the ball to Sammy Smodic's, but James is there. It's played across James. There's just a huge hole for Smodic's to play the ball between Rob Dickey and Zach Viner to run into. All round bad. But I mean, James has just switched off. He's not marking Smodic's. He's not marking anybody. So there's a huge space behind him. It goes between Dickey and Viner. Sigurdsson runs into it. He's in front of Viner and just clips it expertly over Max. 1-0. Simple 1-0. As that. Bad defending.
Yeah. Just a technical point here. Somebody's got some speakers. I can hear a bit of feedback in the background. I don't know who that is.
I can hear that as well.
Out of the three of you. Obviously, it's not me because I'm at the desk. All right, you next, Dave, for the goal. I mean, Mark's just alluded to the fact that James was a bit slow and he goes through games. What did you think of the goal? Was it preventable? Was it a good strike? Should Zach have done better?
Yeah, if looking at my notes from last night and my screenshots and from I saw that goal coming from the fourth minute of the game. Simple as that, because we do not screen our centre backs. I'm probably starting to conclude some things about what I'm seeing from Liam Manning from those opening six games. We are asking our two central midfielders to play differently to how we played under Nigel Pearson, and it exposes us. And the amount of times I took screenshots last night of the match while it was on and saw 15, 20-yard gaps between Joe and Matty James and our two centre-backs, and with Smodic's and Niall Ennis and then people like Moran and who was the other guy, Sigurdsson, finding little pockets of space between them. I was worried, so I kind of saw that goal coming from really early on the game. And it's something I spotted in the very first game against QPR, is that we're trying to kind of press, but almost like press with a six rather than with a whole team. And therefore, everyone bar the back four is kind of a bit higher up the pitch. And therefore, we leave gaps. And to be honest, they could have got in a couple of times before. I think there was one that got called offside. There were a couple where they overhit passes and things like that. So for me, it was totally avoidable because we should have picked it up from fourth minute of the game, and probably there were other instances before that, I suspect. So yeah, it's one of my real worries at the moment is we've gone from a team that is really kind of hard to break down to a team that's suddenly easy to score against. And that's not because we're conceding lots of chances, but what we are doing is when we are conceding chances, they're ending up in the back of the net at the moment. And then some of those are individual mistakes, but I think fundamentally, we don't look structured very well at the back at the moment, and it's highlighting some weaknesses.
Ian, this is worrying what Dave's saying there about structure and setup and what have you. And, you know, we're supposedly now under the guidance of a coaching guru. Now, one could argue that Pearson was on the training ground so little that you're not really comparing the hands-on coaching of Pearson with Manning, but you're comparing the hands-on coaching of Curtis Fleming and Jason Yule with Manning. Yeah. But, you know, Dave said that goal is avoidable. What's your take on that?
I mean, at the end of the day, Smolik's had a lot of space to receive that pass, get on the half turn and flick it round the corner. So you either go with him and kick him, or you have somebody in front of him that stops him getting the ball. We didn't do either. And sometimes you can go with him and the guy does something absolutely brilliant and you look a right Charlie because there's a big hole behind that you've walked out of. So, no, it was, I would say it was probably one of the better constructed goals we've conceded, because we've conceded some right belters, haven't we? You know, Tanner's mistake at Huddersfield, Tanner's mistake against Middlesbrough, Viner's own goal against Middlesbrough. We've conceded some real bad goals. It's not like, you know, as I said the other week, if somebody puts one in the corner from 35 yards, there's an whole lot we can do about that. But we've gone from a side that could defend and couldn't attack to a side that can't do either at the moment. So that's not good. If we're going to play with that more intense attacking front foot pressing style that we were promised, then you need to stick the ball in the net. And if you don't do, that's what I say. I don't know whether the players that we've got have got, or some of the players, not all of them, have got that level of ability to be able to comfortably transition to that style. I've got my doubts.
Well, and there's our owner or son of owner saying, yeah, really justifying the change, which we all know was handled appallingly badly, change of manager, by the fact that, you know, feeling that Nigel wasn't getting the best out of what we've got. Dave, you raised your hand there. What were you going to interject?
Yeah, so just for the benefit of the people listening, trying to explain what I was on about just now, I've just actually posted a couple of screenshots from last night's game from the 4th and the 8th minute showing those gaps. So if you go onto Forever Bristol's Twitter page, you'll see some little screenshots with some little coloured pictures on them as well.
There you go. Those of you who are watching and listening at the same time, and if you're watching it or listening to it on a podcast, those are on Dave's feed on there. So what are those little screenshots showing?
Just showing those gaps between the centre-backs and the midfield, and the two, you know, leaving pockets of space for, in one of them it's Baran picking up a ball off of Smodics, and another one is kind of just waiting for that ball to come through, and just people like Pring then get sucked inside to try and cover as well, and is then leaving, you know, people out wide if they want to go wide and then get crosses in as well. So it just looks fundamentally wrong.
It's worrying. Okay, we go in half time 1-0 down. They almost got a second before halftime when Smodics was wide. So Smodics, our former player, let's talk about him with you first, Mark. Never given a fair crack at a whip at Ashton Gate, was he? Club in the bag and all the rest of it, yeah?
I think he apparently made four appearances. I think they were all substitute appearances and they were only brief cameo roles. He was never really given a chance. I think was that 1920 season, I think, maybe the British season with COVID, or 1819, I don't know. I mean, we do know that he went to Peterborough, who have got, you know, they got a very good record of polishing rough diamonds, and then he got a big money move to Blackburn, and this was the joint leading scorer in the division. He's able to drop off, find pockets of space, and you know, he had a couple of chances last night. We kept him quiet in the main, but yeah, he's done very well since he went there. Mm. You know,
he's a similar sort of player. Would you say you're probably going to disagree with this, Mark? Similar sort of player to Jason Knight in the sense of that busy style, or you know, similar stature, isn't he? He's not a big lad.
Yeah, but he's a forward. I mean, Knight's essentially an attacking midfield player. You know, he could play as a number 10. He gives you a lot more defensively. I mean, his all-round game is far better than Sammy Smodics, but Sammy Smodics is a proven goal scorer. And, you know, he's a proven goal scorer in a championship now, but who honed his craft at Peterborough. And, I mean, I just can't remember much of his time at Bristol City because we've just fleeting glances of him coming on his sub. Yeah. Never really got a chance to see him. No. You know, I think we got in the same season, you know, we had Haki and Abdelhakim. Same things happened. He's gone backwards and he's gone back to probably found his natural, position in League One. So, but Smodics went backwards and he strode on and he's improved himself. So well done to him.
Okay, let's go into the second half. I'll come to you first, Ian, then you, Dave. But Ian, you know, we go in 1-0. You're always in the game at 1-0. But then 7 minutes into the second period, 2-0 down. And I tweeted, second goal, it's game over. How wrong was I to a point? But, you know, conceding a goal from a dead ball situation, that's not great either, is it? And again, I'm going to point a finger at James. You know, he was rooted to the ground when that bloke came in. But how did you see the goal from the corner, Ian?
It was just a poor goal. I mean, it was a high ball to the far post and their guy basically jumped almost unopposed. It seemed like everybody was waiting for somebody else to head it or waiting for Rob Dickey to head it. We're not the tallest team in the league by a long way, but we haven't conceded that many direct from corners and set pieces. So I said it was just a bad goal. I mean, you need to mark people. If you're not going to be able to jump the guy, at least jump into him, block his run, do something. But my criticism would be it was just way too easy. And he's come in, headed it unopposed, firm downward header, 2-0, and I thought when it went in, I thought exactly the same as you. Yeah. I can't see us coming back from this. Sykesy gave us some hope with that goal, but the changes came too late in the game, and I think that had a lot to do with our performance.
Okay, Dave, you on the goal and the other point you wanted to raise?
Yeah, I've not got anything really to add to what the guys have said on the goal, really. You know, it's a poor goal. I think, if anything, I haven't watched it back since the replays at the time, but I got an impression that kind of Dickey was dragged underneath the ball by another of their centre-backs, and that left Wharton kind of that space to be unopposed. And I think, you know, I think you've got to look around and say people just got to take some responsibility for just trying to win the ball. You know, that's what you do there. And I think I was just going to make the point about Smodics as well. You know, it was that he looked really, really sharp in pre-season, and then we signed Casey Palmer 2 days before the season started, and that was the end of it, really. So that's the history of Sammy Smodics. I think he started once, maybe three sub appearances, yeah, but it was about 70 minutes in total. And yeah, there we go.
Okay, Mark, on to you. You're putting your hand up, so we're far away.
Yeah, I've just remembered that goal reminded me of the Cardiff game. Cardiff goal, I think, by Perry NG. So Dickie's the wrong side of the ball, so he's not able to get over the players. He's almost trying to jump over our players to get to the ball. And Wharton, really, he's got four players around him. You think one of them would just need to jump into him to make it harder for him. Because normally what happens if you do that, if you put a defender or a forward under pressure, they tend to head the ball up because they can't get their head. They can't direct the ball into the goal. And that's what he did. But he just did it so easily. And he didn't, you know, he didn't have to take a running jump. He just climbed over our defenders. Like I said on Radio Bristol, it was almost like he was walking up a step ladder to his loft and then he just headed it in. It was that simple. And that that's the very poor thing, a very, very sloppy goal to concede. Yeah. One Wharton to the other, because they had the Wharton brothers, didn't they? Adam playing
they
in midfield.
They did one set up the assist in the first half.
Scott playing at the back, and Scott got lots of touches last night. I think he had about 90 odd passes, and I think he was quite effective for them.
Okay, Ian, you alluded to the subs. I thought that period of 20 minutes from the 60th to the 80th minute when you had Cornick was on and Mometi was on again. Some people thought he did okay last night. He's still not physical enough. TGH came on, made a difference in midfield, but then he went and redid. And the good paid off with a goal. I mean, that was a well-worked goal, Ian, wasn't it? Yeah, TGH tonight and Sykes. And, you know, he's a good little player, Sykes, isn't he?
Yeah. And when you think, you know, they say, well, January's a difficult window and the players aren't out there and this, that and the other. We got him for nothing from a League One team. So there are players about, but it's a matter of scouting. I mean, fair play to, sounds like it was Tinian or one of his guys that scouted Sykes. So good signing. I think he might have originally been brought in to play right wing back, but we don't know the ins and outs of that. But yeah, he's a good player, and I like him in that position. And I think, in some ways, Manning might feel more comfortable in playing the three at the back and having Sykes and Pring as wing backs. But he can't do that without blooding a youngster, because at the moment all of our centre backs, as usual, are injured. Well, I say all of them bar two.
Sorry to interrupt you. If you look on here, I mean, John H has said still looking for the best formation and best 11, but he can't wait for the return of Wells, McCrory, Atkinson, and Naismith can all play in a three, I would imagine. Yes, so, well, two of them do,
they can,
and maybe McCrory can as well.
Yeah, but they
prefer position is right back.
Well, McCrory can also play in midfield, but he's got to be fit first, and they're not going to be back until January. Now, Naki probably might even be back on the bench on Saturday, from what I'm hearing. So, but the other three, I don't think you're going to see them until January.
Okay.
So, yeah, and Naismith off for another scan, and we all know what that means. It's never good news, is it?
No.
So, you know, I've had the scan, so I'll be back next week. That just doesn't happen. And based on, it's his calf again. That's four calf injuries he's had.
Hamstring, Ian.
Well, according to Bristol, I thought it was hamstring, Dave, but according to Bristol Live, it was his calf.
I thought it was his hamstring that he did it. Yeah. He did against Southampton.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong and they're right. I mean, they could easily be wrong, but I thought it was his hamstring.
That's how it was announced, Ian, was it was hamstring.
To be honest.
To be honest,
it doesn't matter. Don't really matter what it is. He can't play.
He's not available for selection.
He's not available. And so, you know, it's already saying, well, we can do this, we can do that, we can do the other. Yeah, but, and you can bet your life, and I'm not trying to be miserable here, but what tends to happen is as soon as they come back, another two or three go missing.
Well,
so I'm a bit nonplussed with it all, really, as to, is that how we're going to solve it. And I think the only way you solve it even if it's only in the short term, is bring in more players.
We'll talk about players in a minute, because the transfer window opening is drawing ever closer. Dave, we got that goal, and then I'll call it that golden 20-minute spell before he undid what he happened to have come across, because the goal, good strike. Then we had James setting up. Knight shot one wide. Sykes lung-busting 60-yard run, and Knight just couldn't bring the ball out from under his feet. Bought a save from the goalkeeper. And then 78 minutes on the clock. Pring, Mometi, back to Pring, cross. Knight with a header. I mean, we're talking about Knight as an attacking midfielder, but there he is on the end of three good chances. Yeah. Where's the rest of the strike force? And then Liam undoes it by bringing off he takes off. Who comes off very late on? Takes off Sykes and Knight. So, what did you think of that? Was a purple patch that we did enough to get an equaliser there, in my view. And I thought we looked decent. I mean, I was bored witless in the first half, but that little 20-minute spell when we got the goal, we raised our game, and I thought we were okay. I didn't feel suicidal like a lot of people seem to be when you read the forum this morning.
We did. I think, you know, after, when we conceded the second goal for about 5 minutes afterwards, you know, football term, our heads were all over the place. No one wanted the ball. It was panic stations. And, you know, at that point, I feared a, you know, a third and a fourth as well. And I'm thinking, you know, that had kind of been quite destroying for us. But, yeah, we made the subs. We got back into it. We played with a bit more intent. Whatever that means, but we did. We started to move the ball forward. We started to keep the ball. No kind of surprise that suddenly Matty James is getting on the ball more. Whether Blackburn switched off a bit at that point, 2-0 up, quite possibly. We certainly seem to have a bit more time to be able to find our passes. And then, yeah, and then we made some subs, which the easy answer to that is they've played a lot of minutes. They're tiring, and we got another game. But they were the two players, you know, along with, you know, people like Mometi and Cornick were starting to get involved as well, that were fashioning chances for us. And it kind of just seemed to be, don't you just try and play them through tonight to the end of the game and try and get something because we're in the ascendancy? And it didn't quite work for me. And once again, you know what I'm like. I think there's a couple of kind of excuses coming out from Manning in terms of some of his choices and selections. And he said on Saturday, and I sort of hark back to that, but he made some comment after the game that he took Sykes off because he played a lot of minutes. Yeah, I can't argue with that. But he said George Tanner was starting to get exposed. Well, I went back and watched that 15 minutes of the second half again, and it's just not true. There are a couple of Headley there, left wing back, hadn't had a kick all game until he took Sykes off. And we changed formation at that point as well, and it undid us. And I think, you know, I'm going to be critical. I'm only an amateur. I'm only a fan. But I think there's some big questions about being able to read the game. And that's not just down to him. That's down to his assistant. It's down to James Crouse, who's the guy he's brought in as this analyst coach. You know, I do sometimes wonder what they're feeding back. Because
Do you think, Dave, there's a general lack of experience? And when Manning was appointed, I looked at who his team were at Oxford, and he had a player, he had one of his team who's still at Oxford, Craig Short, who is, you know, he's not football royalty by a country mile, but he's played most of his football at a higher level. And whereas Lee Johnson's ego was so big that he'd never have an experienced head alongside him, John Ward wanted an experienced head alongside him, and he was an experienced manager. And you've got two guys that have been given keys to, I won't say a battleship, but, you know, their playing ability, technically Manning might be superb with all the badges and he's been exposed to environments, but do you think we need an old head? And as I said on a podcast not so many weeks ago, oh, we have that old head in Nigel Pearson, and Nigel could maybe have guided these people on their way. But then we know Pearson was gotten rid of because the Lansdownes didn't like his attitude and in calling their policy bonkers and that he was irritated.
Yeah, I'm kind of loath, you know, to reach too many conclusions. I guess I'm just highlighting what I've seen so far. But yeah, there's definitely a lack of experience, you know. The whole point of Nigel's setup, in my opinion, was we're aiming for the Premier League. You know, we can laugh and joke a little bit about that at this moment in time. Therefore, I need people who know what it takes to be in the Premier League. And he had that in Fleming. He had that in Ewell. He had it in Dave Rennie. And now we've got none of it. You know, we've got, you know, you can look all the way across the structure. And I don't, I'm not going to kind of be disparaging of people. There's a hell of a load of hate for Brian Tinian going round at the moment. I don't know the dynamics inside the HPC, so I'm not going to comment that. You know, there's loads of stuff about, oh, he's a snake. I just have to kind of judge him on what happens in the current structure. But you've got John Lansdowne as chairman, who's, you know, he's not chairman of a 30 million turnover company, is he? You've got Gavin Marshall, who's a finance guy, you know, very good at his finances. But is he a CEO? What experience has he got to be a CEO? I don't know. We've got the young guy, he's probably his 30s, isn't he? Tom Rawcliffe, who's stepping up into be a CEO, COO from a finance position.
Yeah.
And then we've got, you know, guys in the coaching setup.
Well,
that haven't experienced that.
And to be fair, Dave,
And so, yeah, you know, unless they really are super coaches and Superman managers, then
it's going to be a shit show.
You're going to have a void, I'm afraid.
And we said on this podcast that Phil Alexander was Mr. Invisible. But again, he was that potential to be that father figure at age 60, 61, right? And I'm rapidly coming to the view that he was probably an advocate of Nigel Pearson. And that's what probably cost him his job, that he still, well, I'm not going to sack him. I'm not going to do your dirty work for you. Right, you next, Ian. I mean, we've gone on a bit there about, you know, the structure and the lack of experience. Yeah, never mind players, right? Because these players were not doing great under Pearson, but there's the injuries, and we just mentioned four players. If they were in the team now, would it be different? Wells, Macquarie, Atkinson, Naismith, they'd all be first picks. But what is your view on this lack of experience at every level in the club, Ian? Every level, on and off the pitch.
So should we go to Ipswich and get Mark Ashton? Because he's got lots of experience and he's got a very inexperienced coach, and they're 10 points clear of third place. I'm sorry, but you're on that forum too much and you're going down that many rabbit holes. I can't believe it. You know, we've got the conspiracy theory. Nigel Pearson would still be manager at that club if he hadn't started throwing hand grenades.
Yeah, right. That's what I said.
Why is he throwing hand grenades, Ian? That's what you need to ask.
The reason he was throwing hand grenades is he wanted a new contract and he wasn't going to get one. And I, you know, whether that was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, he knew what he was doing. He was a clever bloke. He's not daft. He ain't one of these blokes that sort of engage mouth before engaging brain. He knew what he was saying. And it was only going to end one way once that started, because I think he would still be there as our manager and we'd have made the change in the summer. That's my understanding of what the situation would be. But I think he pushed him into
in terms of what they're expecting to get out of that team, what happened around the Alex Scott transfer. They basically pulled the rug from under his feet and given him no chance, have they? So, you know, that
you could say that with all the players we've signed, Dave. I'm not taking the side of the board, but if they wanted to make a change, I think they'd have let this contract run down and done it more in the summer. But they you can't start throwing hand grenades at owners.
Dave's trying to say, why didn't they say, right? So if he's,
why not he's, get rid he, of the summer?
Pearson was saying,
yeah, how do you know? All right.
With it because they've
all right, well, so how do you know they didn't have that conversation?
Well, he should have said.
He was still in the job till October.
They didn't have the conversation about the summer and say, look, we're not going to give you a new contract? Well, I mean, they didn't offer him a new contract. So that tells you what you want to know. They could have easily said to him, well, or what I would have said, and I suggested it plenty of times on air, is, well, look, Nigel, we're 14th in the table, wherever we are. It ain't going gangbusters, but you're doing okay. Let's see where we are in the summer. But he didn't seem happy with that for some reason. I don't know. Now, on the Scott money,
they're expecting the club.
Wait a minute. No. Let's do this now, because in the summer, Brian Tinian, and you were at the same bloody lunch I was at, Dave, said, I said to him, how many players are we going to sign this season, Brian? We're going to sign three. All right. If Scotty goes, we're going to sign four.
Five. Yeah.
Boomer. He said, we finished up signing six, right? Because we had to get the goalkeeper because Walls Richards hurt himself. And we went out and got Taylor Gardner-Hickman because McCrory had picked up a long-termer, right? So, and Nigel and Brian Tinian said, everybody was bought into that. We're going to get three, four if Scotty goes. We've got, that was the plan A was three. The plan B was four. Now, that's what they were all bought into, Tinian said. And he said that in the summer before there was any transfer activity at all.
Because I heard him say that. Ian's right.
Yeah. So that's what he said. Now, if Nigel didn't agree with that and he expected a lot of money, and by the way, I think he should have been given some money when we sold Scott. Okay? Not all of it, by a long way, because we know we're only getting to get it over 4 years of his contract or whatever it is. And great to see that the Premier League have now decided to make a change and they can only amortise players' contracts over 5 years. That's a good move. So, but what I think people, what you've got to say is that they've made the change now. I think they should have given him some money to strengthen, not just because we sold Scotty, but because of all the blasted injuries again. But there you go. Let Dave have a peek, and then Mark as well.
Dave, what were you going to say?
That's the whole point, though. Brian Tinian has said we had two players for every position. Well, we didn't, because we had long-term injuries. We had Rob Atkinson, who's still not back. He was not going to be back until November, December. We had Eamon Benarous, who, you know, dread to think when he's going to come back. So, and then we sold Alex Scott as well. So we didn't have two players for every position. I think just a couple of things that, you know, Matt Morris just put something. I know Matt, hi Matt. I don't think Nigel Pearson was the answer to everything. But what I do think is he was slowly building the club in the right direction. And we've taken a huge gamble in ripping that up. And I think just going back on your point, they have retrofitted a story around budget set in March and all that stuff. They've absolutely pulled the rug from under Nigel Pearson's feet from what was agreed, and he's gone the way of Cotterill. He's voiced his opinion, and you're probably right, he probably could have stayed there, but he probably thought, what's the point when I'm going to be not getting a contract next summer and they're making it more and more difficult for me to achieve with what I've got because I haven't got the squad to meet the expectations of what they said they wanted. And you know, that's my view. And it's not about reading the forum. Blimey, on the forum, I'm the one probably leading a lot of that kind of conversation. So I'm certainly not taking a view from other people. This is my own thoughts on it.
Yeah, Mark.
I didn't say it wasn't your own thoughts. I was talking to Dave about going down rabbit holes. I mean,
And we try to be balanced on here, you know, because we have been accused of being sort of on the happy clappy side of things, but the chickens are coming home to roost a bit at the moment. Right, Mark, you've been waiting patiently.
Sorry, yeah, I was wondering. I thought you'd forgotten about me. I think we become sidetracked by the whole issue around the club. It was a complete and utter mess they made with Nigel Pearson's exit. But that's all gone now. We've got to think about how the team improves over the coming games and start going up the league. I mean, I think the situation that Liam inherited, it means we've probably got to go backwards to go forwards. And fans don't like that. They don't like that at all. They're uncomfortable with that. And in the last home game, the silence, you know, was just terrible. You could feel the tension running throughout the stadium. You know, it 1-0, 1-1. Until they scored that goal and the stands emptied. But I think that there is some positive signs. The players need to be mentally stronger and have more energy, take some responsibility. I mean, going back to that James, you know, shouldn't James have just been marking Smodics or getting closer to him? I don't know. It's just a simple act of marking a player. I don't think it's rocket science that he needed to be closer to him. To close that space down from a standing start from Morton's pass, those little things, you know, defending corners, that would have been the same under Pearson as under Manning. But we need to play with more energy. I think, you know, we either press more or we don't. But we do need to play with more energy. And the reason that the team's been rotated is because players aren't in form. I'd like to see Mehmeti start against, I think Mehmeti edges Bell out to start against Sunderland, who are going to pose us a lot more problems than Blackburn did. But it's the problem with both of them is that they both can't defend. Once they are the wrong side of their opponents, they find it very difficult to tackle back, especially Mehmeti. But he did look better. He took a little while to grow into it, but he took his player on. And, you know, if he'd been in the Premier League, he probably would have got a penalty. He had his shirt pulled off his back before he tried a cross shot. So it's just players taking responsibility. Like, we got the centre-backs stepping into midfield. I like that. I'd like a midfielder, you know, who can help release Knight. When Cornet came on last night, he linked the attack very well. I think the mistakes that Manning's making are things like the substitutions that weakened us last night. I'd rather see Sykes run into the ground. I mean, that run he made down the right-hand side was tremendous, brilliant.
Run. And it's not like Wednesday. It's not like it was a Wednesday night game.
No.
This, you know, he's a fit bloke, right? And in the old days, it was Saturday, Tuesday, right? It's not like we're playing Saturday lunchtime even. It's Tuesday night, right? And he's taking him off in every game. He's taking him off in every game, I believe, somebody said.
Yeah. It's hacking fret. Once those substitutions were made and he got into the game, Cornick was linking him well. Now, Cornick is a forward player. He can't play with his back to goal, but he did some things right by linking the play well, something that Tommy wasn't doing. And that's another thing.
Yeah.
With Tommy not taking those chances, you know, early on, Williams turns the ball over and he gets a chance one-on-one with the defender and he can't keep the ball down. We're creating chances. We're in every game. We're not getting...
It's not a shit show.
We're a team that, they're, you know, I think Ian's alluded to it before. We're almost doing things right. That's the frustrating things.
We're losing a game of snooker. It's like losing a game of snooker on the pink or the blue. We're not like...
Yeah, exactly. You know,
last night's statistics in terms of shots, you know, they had 13, 3 on target. We had 11 shots, right? And there was a time when away from home, we weren't ever getting into double figures. We've had away games where we've managed 3 shots on target in as many games. I'd like to see players.
I mean, look at Jason Knight. All his chances were half chances. Right. Okay. Blocked on the left channel in the first half. Opens up. Keeper makes a great save in the second half. Header, and then that cross from Sykes, he takes a step back and a turn. They weren't clear cut chances. They demanded some work from Knight, but we need other players to be able to do that in the forward line. But we do keep making chances. If we didn't, I'd be worried.
Right, Dave, then Ian, and Ian alluded to the fact that Sunderland beat Leeds 1-0 last night. Watched a bit of their game at the weekend that was on telly. They are going to be a different proposition. And I know it's a squad game, right? So it's not like it's the 11 players that start, finish the game. How would you line up on Saturday, Dave, against Sunderland, who are going to come with a big crowd from up north up there, well-supported team? Going to be a tough game. And it's not a must-win, but we need a morale boost to win. So how would you line up on Saturday against them?
Do you know what? I honestly don't know. that's how I feel at the moment now. I don't think I've seen too much kind of consistency in selection to kind of know how I would play. I think I'd have to bring Gardner Hickman in. But I don't know. It's a really difficult one. I'm going to defer, which is most.
Let me ask you a couple of questions linked to that. Would you start Mickey Bell on Saturday? Has he done enough to deserve a starting place?
No, he's in his fourth. He's in his fifties. I wouldn't start Mickey Bell.
Sorry, I'm living in a time warp.
I think he's, you know, I think he's still playing like he's an academy player. He's very immature in his way he plays, and I don't think it's particularly helping us at the moment. And I don't think it's helping Cam Pring either. So we need to find some way of getting the best out of Cam Pringle, who in that last 25 minutes looked really good last night again. So no, I wouldn't. So there's a couple of players who will miss out, but I think I just want to get what I think are my best players on the pitch. I'm not too fussed about formations and things like that. So I want Taylor Gardner-Hickman on the pitch because I think he's one of our better players. I want Tommy Conway on the pitch because I think he's our best striker. Jason Knight, Dickie, that Pring. Yeah, so I probably,
some players pick themselves, Dave, don't they?
I could probably pick your 11. I wouldn't know how to put them out, though.
All right, let me ask Ian the question then. Ian, come on. They've been watching us and they say, right, you lot, you think you can do better. Right, Ian, in the dressing room, who are you picking to walk out at 3 o'clock at Ashton Gate on Saturday?
I look, there are two formations. One of them is more, I would say, risky than the other because it means giving a debut to Jamie Knight-Lebel. But 4-1-3-2. So you've got the same back four as last night. Matty James holding, the three in front are Taylor Gardner-Hickman, Sykes and Knight. And then the two up front are Tommy, and if he's fit, Naki. If he's not fit, Harry. Then if you want, because Sunderland play a 3-4-3, and they're three up front. I got a feeling if it's the same Pritchard that they had before, the little fellow who came on and turned the game against us, they might be playing with a false nine. But you look at the players either side, and they're useful. You've got Ba. And the winger,
Jack Clark, yeah.
Jack Clark, good player. So you've got them. You've got young, you've got Jude Bellingham's brother in the middle of the field. I think he got the goal last night. So the other option is you go with a three at the back with Pring and Sykes as your wing backs. Then you've got Knight-Lebel on the right, Viner in the middle, Rob Dickey on the left of that back three. Then your midfield is James Knight and Taylor Gardner-Hickman, your three central guys, and then up front, the same two. So I just think that the issue with Tommy, I think he's trying hard enough, might even be trying too hard. And we know the kid can finish because we've seen him do it, but he needs company up there and he needs somebody to play off, play with, take some of the weight off him and stop him getting isolated. And Dave mentioned the gaps that were there last night between the back four and the midfield and the midfield and the forwards. And it's just you play good sides and they'll just fill those gaps with blokes who are going to get on the ball, get on the half turn and get you in a lot of trouble. And last night, another thing that went wrong last night was our passing accuracy was lousy. So I think that would be my two alternatives.
Okay. Just
more or less to get some
time. Yeah, from my own perspective. Sorry about this. Mark, are you agreeing sort of loosely with what Ian? I think what Ian said as a side there, I think your risky side, Ian, was Jamie Knight-Lebel, but you went on with the safe formation, which is what I asked you. What do you think is likely to happen? Mark, would you make any, I mean, would you maybe try Tanner, get your best players on the pitch? So, really get Tanner off because he's been the butt of some criticism. He wasn't great. He wasn't bad last night, but you could put Sykes as a conventional right back where he played in a four. And then I'm not his fan, but get your best players on the pitch. Bring Andy Vyman on playing in that wide right role.
No,
I'm not in favour of that, but what would your lineup be, Mark?
I try something a bit different to give some solidity and let Knight play. So I would bring in Taylor Gardner-Hickman for Joe Williams, and I bring in Mometi for Bell, and I play 4-4-1-1. So you've got Knight behind Tommy Conway. So Knight can drop back into the midfield as a five, or he can, when we're in defence, and he can play alongside Conway when we're attacking and give him some assistance. That means we can play Mometi wide on one flank, and Sykes on the other. And Sykes obviously got he's got defensive capability to protect Tanner. the only thing is we may be a little bit weak on the left because Mometi isn't as good defensively, but he will have to keep close to the bell. But that gives you some solidity and will make it harder for us to play through. I think we need to let Sunderland have more possession and try and turn the ball over. Yeah.
I like that side you picked there, Mark, for what it's
Thank
worth.
You.
I know jack shit when it comes to the finer points of the game.
Not Jack Clark, then.
We're coming up to the Christmas New Year period before.
Can we just say one thing?
Yeah.
I felt very old last night when James Hill came on, Matt Hill's son. He will be 21. He'll be 21. In January, he's on loan from Bournemouth. But Matt Hill's son, Matt Hill, was at school with my cousin. My cousin's 43.
Right. So the transfer window opens on the 1st of Jan, and we're playing home to Millwall that day. But before then, we got the Sunderland Hull home games, Watford, Birmingham away. 5 games, 5 points based on recent form. Yeah, where would that put us? I mean, I'm starting to look at QPR, who've turned around a bit of form, so I don't think the bottom three are cut and dried. Do you think, I'll start with you, Dave, and Tomo said this on the text feed on here, he thinks Lansdowne, John, he's going to spend £5 million in the January window. Do you think that's likely? And if it is it really saving face? And do you think Danny will say, well, hang on, we've screwed up here, right? What do you think is going to happen in that transfer window? Because we could, if the current form continues, we could be closer to the relegation position than we are the playoff positions. So are they going to splash the cash in Jan, Dave, as a save face exercise?
What are we at the moment? I think we're 7 points either way, aren't we, at the moment?
Something like that, probably, yeah.
So, splash the cash. I think we will make some signings. I think we'll spend some money. I don't know how much. I think it'll depend on really what they're trying to do in this window. And we'll have to probably be a bit, you know, guided by what we see. I guess my problem at the moment is I actually don't know what we need at the moment because I don't know how we're playing. And so we seem to be flip-flopping between, you know, trying to play one way or the other. And I think that makes it difficult to recruit because you're also not, once again, don't necessarily recruit to the formation you want to play, but you need to, if we're going to flip-flop between playing a back four one game or one half and then a back three the other, like we did on Saturday where we started with one and went to the other, then you're going to need flexible players. And if you're going for flexible players, you're narrowing your field of players. So I think this goes back to my underlying thought at the moment is he's trying to make too much change too quickly. And there wasn't a lot wrong with what we had. Matt Moore, you'll disagree with me. Yeah, it wasn't perfect under Nigel Pearson by any stretch, but we had a solid mid-table-ish side that, to all intents and purposes, the only gap was they're not being coached properly to achieve what they're capable of. So let's not try and rebuild Rome straight away. I kind of find to take this back into kind of real life work experiences. You know, you don't go in on day one and make changes.
No,
you have to have an evaluation period. And this 13 games before the end of the window or 10 games before the start of the window should have been the evaluation period to say, not only what do we need in the window if we need anything, but how exactly do I want to play? Because we actually heard from Liam Manning when he came along. He's adaptable, and I guess one of the things I'm slightly disappointed with, and that's a kind of trend towards disappointment, is actually seems like he's only got one way of playing, and he's not as adaptable as what he said he is, and he's trying to make that fit what he's got here, and I think that's kind of mistake number one.
Just
he should have just been a bit more patient.
Yeah, and picking up on that, Dave, I saw his interview post-match last night. And, I mean, being questioned by Dave Barton is like being attacked by a dead sheep, to coin a phrase, right? But he was back to looking at the ground and he looked, I'm going to use the phrase, a little bit like the rabbit in headlights. He was using a couple of his buzzwords in there and he's not got the slick, cheeky, chappy thing that Lee Johnson had. But you know, he looked a bit subdued last night, I thought, in the interview.
He did. I didn't think it was... I heard the Radio Bristol one last night before I came on here. I watched the club one because there was a fair sense of what you've just said on the forums last night. I don't think it was too bad an interview, to be honest. I think, you know, it's a bit of, you know, rhetoric going on and, you know, about looking down at the ground or whatever. And I think his head's up enough of it for me. I think it's one of those interviews, you know, you've lost 2-1 away from home. We weren't very good for an hour. Although I probably contradict that. I thought in bits and pieces there were some decent things last night. I'm not going to go all in on we lost, therefore it's all crap. Because actually there were some bits in that opening 20 minutes where for once we actually pinched the ball high and we created some chances.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, on the flip side, there were like huge gaping holes in some parts of our structure. But, you know, I try and be as balanced as possible. And I think it was a... It was a bit of a funny old game. I'm not gonna basically take last night as being all defining. I think there's more to come from him. We need to just see how these next few games go, and then we can start to make a
firm judgment. Because up to Millwall, that'll take us up to 11 games in charge. Ian, do you think Lallana sounds or Junior is going to be saying that I think we've beep upped here. Look, we got to save face. You know, we got to give him some money to spend. Brian knows who to buy. We got some money. Let's go. And then they'll dress it up as bringing forward our summer plan. So do you think we'll splash the cash? Do you think we might even enter the loan market, which is the same but different?
Yeah, I mean, the answer to that in one word is yes. Splash the cash is probably a bit strong. I think there'll be money available, and there'll certainly be money available for wages and loans. But in simple terms, John in particular can't afford for Manning to fail. So they will back him probably, and it isn't fair, but they'll back him more than they would have backed Nigel if Nigel was still here. And I don't agree with that, but it is. I think it's the reality of the situation that they find themselves in. They make some good points about decide what you want to do. So do you want to go? Do you want to play a three? Play a three. If you want to play a four, and you want to, you know, whatever you want to do, decide on that style. I think he's complicated a little bit because he wants to play one style in possession and another style out of possession. And I think the players are getting a bit confused at times as to whether they're Arthur or Martha and thinking, well, hang on a minute, do I go? Do I stay? What's he doing? And he changes that in game. And that is something you can do. If you've got Premier League players, you know, your Liverpools, your Man Cities, your Arsenals, they get it. They can do it. You get the further down the pyramid you go, the players are a little bit and by the time they've made the choice, you know, someone's run past them or they're in the wrong place or they've missed a chance. So I think that's important. He's going to decide, and if I was John Lansdowne, I'd be sitting in a room with him in Tinian when they're saying, well, we want £1 million for this and we got to pay this bloke £15,000 a week if we want him and we want the other. And I'd be saying, right, well, tell me, with the players that we've got, where do they fit in? Show me in a formation up on there. We're playing a game Saturday. We go out and get these players. Where are they playing? And by the way, where are you going to fit in the lads that we've already got? Or do you want to get rid of some of the ones we got? Do you want to try and sell Andy Byman, for example, as a sellable asset? Do you want to sell Sam Bell? Or England under 20 international?
Or Tommy?
Do you want to do that? Or so tell me how it's all going to work, because we don't want to end up with 35 players.
Plan, isn't it?
My own view.
Yeah,
it's a real plan. And my own view is that 27, which is what our squad is at now, officially, including four goalies, it's set that. So you come out, you say, right, I got 23 outfield players. But the point I was making at, right at the start of the season when I was getting decried for it was we've got to allow for between 4 and 6 injured players because of the way it's been. Now, I please God, we don't have to keep doing that because that's going to get tiresome. But for me, we need an at least, well, we need another 4 outfield players.
Okay.
All right. So that you can roll with the punches right. as far as injuries go. Okay. But it's all about that plan, that strategy. And you're sat in a room saying, right, you showed me on that bloody clipboard or whatever you're going to use all these things.
I mean, 100% right. That's what you do. That's probably what we'd all do if we were sat there controlling the purse strings. But you have to question whether they really knew.
Because if you don't know,
do know what they're doing.
It's no good going out and, you know, you're talking earlier on about Sammy Smodics and Adelakken and Moisa and all these players we've signed who've never really got a try, because you've got way too many players. You've got Mark Ashton, who I think the secret of Ipswich's success, part of it's the coach that he's got.
Who came from Manchester United. I don't know where he fitted in the hierarchy.
I know. But hang on. But otherwise I'll lose me thread. The big thing is the people that are managing him, because they're obviously not saying spend what you like, do what you want. They're obviously saying, no, that's your budget, kid. Now you do the best as you can within that, because that's what we can afford.
Yeah.
So, and they may have got lucky with the choice of the coach, but he's got, you know, you're talking about experience earlier on. He hasn't got huge experience as a man. I think this is his first managerial job.
Yeah, he was doing it, though, at Manchester United. Dave wants to come in quickly, but I want to finish with Mark. Dave, your point.
Ian, just go and Google, and I can't remember the guy's name, but he's the Game Changer 2020 or the Arizona Fire Chief Pension Fund guy. His name's Mark. Oh, I can't think what his name is. Try and Google it. He did an interview summer before last with Ipswich Town. And I tell you what, there is no way I'd want to mess with him. He comes across as being completely on the ball about what this football club's doing. He's not a football expert. He's employed the football experts. But it's one of those where
he's a tough-minded businessman. Yeah, I think I saw that interview back in the day.
There's a difference, and completely take away. I think McKenna is, you know, whether he's just a one-off great fit for Ipswich, I doubt it.
They've not splashed the cash. They're not doing it with high wage earners that have come in.
But if you look at it, it's a trend. Yeah. It's a trend that's developed in the game because Millwall have done the same thing with Joe Edwards. Yeah. You know, we'll get rid of the older established manager, in their case, Gary Rowett, and we'll bring in this new
guy because he's going to do it. But with Joe Edwards, as we said right at the top of the podcast, right, it ain't going that well in recent weeks. Right, I need to finish, guys, because we've done just over the hour. Mark, I just want you to have a little piece from you. Do you think the lads have said about signing players, but the loan options are there? Do you think the dressing room is strong enough to be able to cope with, I'll say, up to 2 loan players coming in? And a few people have commented, and I noticed it last night. I was watching the game, part our commentary and part Blackburn's commentary. And funnily enough, Blackburn's commentators thought they got away with it last night based on our second half performance. But interestingly, a few people were saying that Naki and Naismith, particularly in the first half, weren't being massively complimentary about we seemed a bit confused or what have you. So Pearson's argument against bringing loan players in was dressing room's not strong enough, or we don't want to develop other people's players. Could you see loan players coming in rather, and particularly if Atkinson and McCrory and people like that still aren't fit, but loan players coming in to shore up this season? Yeah, because we're going to be struggling to get in the top 10 if things carry on the way they're going. Mark, just to finish.
Yeah, I wouldn't think about the playoffs. I mean, the club will do their due diligence. You wouldn't want to bring in Mavericks like Morelos, for example. Not that we can afford him, the ex-Rangers player who's who's just left his team, I think, in South America somewhere. So you try and do your due diligence. You won't want to bring in mavericks who are too loud. But I mean, this whole thing about dressing room harmony is a myth. You'll always get players with egos. You'll always get quiet players. It's up to the manager to get the best out of those players and try and hold it all together. So not everybody's going to be of the same mind. That's ridiculous. It's the same in an office, isn't it? You're a manager of a company, you're going to get different people. People who like to talk a lot, who are loud and brash, people who are quietly just get on with their jobs and really professional and stick at it. It's knowing how to handle those people. So I expect us to bring people in. I wouldn't worry about the harmony in the dressing room. I just get the best players to do the job, just get a bit of due diligence. It's going to be about availability. It's a lottery. It's a loaning clubs and a selling clubs market in January. So it's going to be very difficult to get players. We're not going to spend a lot of money. It just won't happen.
Except Palmer Holden to come back. He scored last night, didn't he?
Where is he on loan at the moment? Is it Newport? That's good. Players, I mean, that's what the Yeboah needs to do. Need to go out on loan and get regular football. Like Ian said, man's football, you know, a bit physical in a lower division where he's playing from the start, gets knocked about a bit and learns the game like Semenyo did. That's why he is where he is now, you know, at Newport.
So Sam maybe is trying to go out on loan.
Yeah, it's possibly, but I'd rather see our players playing regularly in the league, our better players, because they'll be better when they come back, like Cam Pring. Yeah. So, yeah, let's get two or three players in January. I reckon we'll only possibly get two, maybe only one. But we need a goal scorer because it's the goals that are the problem.
I know.
We're creating chances, we're not scoring.
Okay, we'll be doing our Sunderland Review podcast at 6 o'clock on Saturday. Dave, great to have you on. I know your commitments are always there, but Dave, I'd very much like you came on after the Birmingham game, which is the tail end of Christmas week. I'm sure, you know, it'll be a welcome break from mince pies and present opening, so that'll be the Birmingham game. Ian, you'll be back with me on Sunday morning. I did say Sunday morning at 9, didn't I? Yes, a home game. So Sunday morning at 9. Sunderland could be managed by the young, inexperienced lad from Reims, whose club have been paying 25 grand a game to FIFA because he's not got his coaching badges, or maybe he has now, but that's how much they valued him. So two, I'll call them textbook managers rather than experienced players in the game. But everybody who's listened, Ian, one final point.
Just a quick one. Two quick points. If all these managers seem to be getting hewn, you know, these younger guys getting hewn from the same block. So are we going to get a situation where you've just got two teams out there all the time, absolutely counteracting what each other are doing because they're both trying to do exactly the same thing all the time? And that's just for people to think about for another day. The second thing is a point that Mark was making about personalities and young managers. And what I've always found is, and Dave made a point earlier about trying to change too much too quick. The other mistake they make is they think that the world began with them. And football managers are terrible at this. They go into a club and everything that's gone behind, the players aren't fit and everything's bad that they go into. And sometimes I think you have to sit down and think, hang on a minute, the world didn't begin when Liam Manning walked in. No. And there are things at the club that are very right and there are things at the club that are very wrong. And this period of assessment, and I've seen it in business a lot, this period of assessment is very, very, very important because you can rub a lot of people up the wrong way very unnecessarily by trying to go at it like a bull at a gate. And too much change, all you do is confuse people.
Yeah.
And there's nothing worse than having a company where everybody's wandering around in a state of confusion. I'll tell you that now.
Anyway, guys, thanks a lot for that. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back with another match review. I'm on the Sunderland's What the Falk podcast. So I'm featuring on that before the game. Dave, one final point from you.
Yeah, just going to say, Ian, the guy's name is Mark Steed, Steed. Worth having a little read of, and there's a video out there somewhere as well, and some of the listeners might want to have a little read about it as well.
But I just repeat that Mark Steed is a member of Game Changer 2020. He's on the Arizona Pension Fund board. He's a custodian of the money.
Yeah, if any of you have watched Deliverance, that's kind of what I think would have happened to Mark Ashton if he'd have messed up, okay?
There we go. All right.
So, him and Mark Ashton on tuning banjos?
For the very last time on this episode, have a good week. What's wrestling? Cheers, everybody.
Thank you.
Going to put my cares in a whistle, blow them all away. What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin's out, bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.